Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what's going on? Coming off of a big-time walk-off tonight in Game 1, K-State comes from behind to beat TCU in Game 1 of this regular series finale here in Toyton Family Stadium in Manhattan, Kansas. I'm Eddie Greer, host of the Purple Project Podcast, all things K-State, here on this Thursday night, May 18th, 2023. I was not at Toyton Family Stadium. I kept up with the game here on ESPN Plus, Big 12 Now Network. K-State there was in trouble for most of the game after striking first, but had a rally late there after TCU takes the lead in the eighth inning there. K-State rallies for a huge win there to keep their regional hopes alive on this podcast. This is episode 158 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. I'll bring on my co-host Alex in just a moment. We do have a special guest here. He will be joining us in a little bit. The Purple Project Podcast, if this is your first time listening to this podcast, welcome on board to the pod. You love what you're hearing. Next thing you should do, subscribe to the Purple Project Podcast wherever your favorite podcast provider is. As we approach the end of May already here, folks, in the end of the calendar athletic season, which has been a tremendous one to remember for Kansas State University as well. But, of course, a couple weeks ago, we had Jasmine Halliburton on this podcast, which kind of started the special guest of the summer here in 2023. So go check that out. That's episode 156. Tonight, we have, he will join us momentarily. He's watching the, as we're sitting here recording this, the fourth quarter Lakers Nuggets, the Nuggets on a surge right now. When I was also watching this game as well, so I'm keeping up with both games, the Nuggets game, and then of course K-State comeback over TCU tonight there as well. So Austin Buckey, former K-State basketball player who played under Bruce Weber and played with the likes of Barry Brown, Wesley Iwundu, Kamau Stokes, and Xavier Sneed, and others. He will join us. He started his K-State career back in 2015. He'll join us momentarily here on this podcast. I'm excited to have him on the show. But right now, who's on the show right now? My usual co-host of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly, Alex Aiden, out there in San Diego, California. Alex, what's happening out there?
Not too much, Eddie. I am trying to get over a cold, so if you hear a cough or two, apologies for that. This is my MJ flu game. Okay, that's what this is for me. Okay, this is MJ in game. What was it? Was it game five against the Jazz? I forget which game it was, but this is my MJ flu game. Stepping up, except this is nowhere near the flu. So it's a mild cold. So, but you know, hey, a mild cold for me is probably like the flu for MJ. So, But I'm doing good, Eddie. Doing good. I caught the Royals when they were here in San Diego this week.
How was that?
They did not play well the night I went. But the Royals won the series, ironically enough, over the Padres. The one game that I went to was the one loss by the Royals. The Royals ended up winning Tuesday, Wednesday. But they lost Monday. But I did get a main Machado bobblehead, which is currently sitting on my desk right now next to Patrick Mahomes' bobblehead. So everything's good with me. You mentioned K-State, baseball wild game today, and we'll get into that. And then obviously we have Austin on, to discuss K-State hoops, some of his time, some of what's going on right now in K-State hoops, which is a lot of uncertainty, honestly, with kind of the, current situation with the roster. But yeah, excited to dive into baseball because we have got a wild, wild weekend up at Toyton.
Yes, we do, and it started tonight. Obviously, usually these weekend series start on Friday through Sunday, but instead, it started tonight, Thursday, Game 2. When this podcast rolls out on the grid to your favorite podcast provider. Game 2 will be tomorrow night, 6 Central Time. Germán Virgado will be on the mound for K-State, and then TBD for K-State in Game 3 on Saturday, which originally the time was 4 o'clock, but it got moved up 2 hours ahead, so it's going to be 2 o'clock first pitch a little bit after that, folks. Well, wow, it was a wild game indeed for K-State. K-State struck first, and for those of you just tuning in, K-State walk-off in the bottom of the ninth inning, down a run to TCU. K-State rallies back to win TCU in Game 1 and break a 4-game losing streak against the Horned Frogs on the diamond. This has been a theme throughout the, I think, between TCU and K-State. We had some thrilling games, whether that's football or baseball or basketball for that matter. Add this to the classic, if you want to say, a little bit of a rivalry between these two. K-State 7, TCU 6 in Game 1 of the regular season finale. K-State with their original hopes alive here. I thought we were going to be in trouble there for a minute. But again, all year long, Pete Hughes' squad showed why they've improved their mental toughness throughout the season. And it was on full display tonight in this one. Tyson Nabers gets the win. 2 innings pitched. Did give up 2 hits. Surrendered 2 runs. All of them were earned. Walked 1. Struck out 3. His ERA now kind of goes up now to a still an impressive 1.79 ERA. Loss goes to Garrett right there. Blown save opportunity for him. Pitched an inning in 2/3 there. 2 hits, 2 earned. 2 walks, 4 strikeouts there as well for Garrett right there. And just to recap it here real quick, K-State struck first. In the first couple innings, 2-0, and TCU tied it in the top of the third, and K-State responded with 2 of their own there in the bottom of the third inning, and then TCU cut it to 1 in the top of the fifth inning, and then each scored in the seventh inning, and then TCU went ahead by a run, scored 2 in the eighth, and of course, K-State capped off a tremendous, thrilling night at home, tweeting magic, as we like to call it here, in Manhattan, Kansas, was alive and well tonight at the ballpark, 7-6. It was the final score in this one. Man, K-State needed this one, and obviously you need to take the series if you're K-State. Alex here, you lose 2-3 to Oklahoma State. You get throttled by the Cowboys on the road. We probably both expected that, but you get one win at least there. But you get throttled. But to answer what they did tonight. It's huge for this team, and now K-State can really seize control and take the series tomorrow night.
They can, Eddie, and obviously going into the series, two bubble teams, right? K-State and TCU, they're both similar spot in the RPI, similar spot in Big 12 wins, and both are bubble teams. I think that a lot of projections have them both as 3 seeds in regionals right now. And so, you know, they're kind of bubble teams. And so this is essentially like a postseason series. And backing up quickly to the Oklahoma State series, you know, you're right. Going into that, I said I'd take a game. You know, I didn't want to get swept, but, you know, Oklahoma State, you know, they're really good. They're projected to host a regional right now. On the road, take a game, fine. If they could win 2 or 3, it'd be amazing. But if you can just take a game there, you know, that's okay. I'm fine. So they get game one. Eddie, which is a fantastic win, 10-9. In case they played some really good baseball, they got up 10-5. Oklahoma State creep back in there, but they were able to hold on. But we saw games 2 and games 2 and 3 not go as well. As K-State lost 19-5 and 12-2. So you could understand them potentially being a little shook from that, but they had all week. Right, they had all week to recover and get right for this TCU game, and it was a hell of a game, Eddie. I watched a good chunk of it, and it was a back and forth game. It was a back and forth game. It felt like a postseason game. It felt like a regional game. And you could just tell how important it was to both teams. Watching that game with the moves that they were making, with the intensity of Pete Hughes getting ejected. For the second time in his K-State career, there, rightfully so, the strike zone was not very consistent there. At one point, and again, you could just feel it. And you know, K-State, I tweeted this, that they didn't play their best baseball, but they found a way to win, and that was the most important thing. Should this game have been in the spot it was in? Probably not. K-State had the bases loaded, no one out, win the seventh inning, and they didn't. And they got a strikeout, and then a double play from Culpepper. And you probably should have gotten more in that inning. TCU gets a couple runs where, yeah, you got bailed out because of an interference call on first base. But Tyson Neighbors doesn't have his A game, allows them to get two runs anyway. You take, you know, you get behind. And K-State just didn't have great at-bats. A lot of times they were chasing pitches. They weren't showing some of the discipline that they've showed good chunks of the season. But in the ninth inning, it shifted, and they started having really good plate appearances. They were patient. They were taking what was given to them. They were, you know, taking advantage of they're really putting the pressure on TCU and making TCU make mistakes, and they were taking advantage of those mistakes. And that's ultimately what set this game up. So was this the cleanest game played? No. Do I think K-State played their best game? No. Do I think TCU played their best game? No. Because you mentioned that Garrett Wright got the loss. That was the first time he'd given up runs since March 18th. So it's been over 2 months since he's even given up a run. So I don't think either team played their best game, but I thought that both, it was a very entertaining game, and both teams really were digging for that game hard, and you could just feel it through the screen, and I think it's a sign, Eddie, of what these last two games are going to be. I think that K-State and TCU both understand the importance, and they're going to come out, and they're going to leave it all out there, and that just makes for some great entertaining baseball on Friday and Saturday. But for K-State, to kind of put a bow on this, for K-State, being able to get that first game takes a lot of pressure off. I really do think so, because you could make an argument, Eddie, that win tonight may have locked them up a regional spot. I hope super regional. Lock up a regional spot. And again, we don't know. We don't know if that's true. You know, maybe they do need another win. You know, maybe they do need two more wins. We don't know that. But there's a good chance that could have very well locked them up a regional. And that takes some pressure off. So K-State can come out here the last two games and play much more free and easy, I think, than TCU. I think more of the pressure is really on TCU at this point. And I think that's a good thing for K-State going into these final two games. And let's just remind people, Eddie, one more time. This is if K-State has not made a regional since 2013 when they won the Big 12. It's been 10 years. It has been a long time. So it's a big deal if they can get over that hump this year. And they're so close to doing it. And this win was a huge step in that direction.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Episode 158 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly. Austin will be joining us here in less than 5 minutes. So, the Nuggets-Lakers game, as we're sitting here recording this episode here on this Thursday night here, about to wrap up there, and the Nuggets look like they're going to take a 2-0 lead. But, yeah, put a bow on baseball here before Austin calls in. Absolutely. Takes the pressure off. Now you're playing with house money. Go out there. You have a chance to lock up the series and do what you have to do there. Tyson Neighbors, the Mr. Dependables for Pete Hughes, who got ejected, as Alex mentioned tonight, came on in relief for Owen Brennema in this game. I'll have a little bit more on this later, but those are the pitchers coming out of the pen like normal there. Brady Day got the game-winning hit there as the left fielder could not make the play there in the bottom of the ninth inning there. Brennan Jones, back to that seventh inning. Yeah, that could have been a huge inning for K-State, but luckily it didn't cost them this game. So luckily K-State did what they have done all year, is battle, and it paid off dividends without their head coach / manager tonight. Brennan Jones, he went 2-4 in this game. Cash Ruggley, who had his streak broken recently, on-base streak recently here, 1-5 in this game. Culpepper, he also went 1-5 in this game. There were a lot of strikeouts. This offense was, even though they were got some timely hits in this game, they struck out quite a bit in this game. Brady Day, before that big hit, he went 2 for 5 in the game. Cody Lotus went 1 for 4 in this ball game as well. So, yeah, game two tomorrow night when this podcast rolls out, it will be right there with game two, 6 o'clock there as well. And then, of course, game three, setting up the stage for Saturday afternoon instead of Sunday. And then, of course, the Phillips 66 Big 12 Championship Tournament begins Wednesday. And obviously, the finalization of the bracket is not out yet. But when that is, I will come on here and we'll talk about it on the Pearl Project Podcast daily. As I'm speaking right now, K-State is still tied for third in the conference with Texas. Same record. 13-9, Oklahoma State is 13-8, and West Virginia looks like, if depending on any self-destruction from them, they could very well win on the regular season title. West Virginia 15-7, excuse me.
Dominant.
They've been really good this year. No question about it. They've been ranked in the top 25 for a majority of the year this year as well. And K-State, they've held their own. So Texas and K-State are locked up. Obviously, the seeding will be decided after Saturday's games for sure. So I'm very anxious to see where K-State's going to be. And since P. Hughes taken over, we know how they play well. We've referenced this on several instances lately on a weekly edition of this podcast. We know how well they play in the Big 12 tournament. They're going to be even more tougher this year. Not saying that, you know, those teams weren't, but they just know how to play in the postseason. And they went to the semifinals last year. So K-State knows how to play in those types of situations. So we'll see what happens. And they dropped TCU to 11-11 in the conference there. TCU, if K-State can win, then they can at least lock up the fourth spot there. But if Texas somewhat falters between now and Saturday, K-State can finish high as 3. I know I said in some of the recordings that I did for the weekend edition of the Purple Project Podcast today, they can finish high as 2. I don't think that's going to happen. They can finish high as 3. So there you go on that as well. But exciting night at the ballpark for those who were there. You guys were in for a treat. Another thriller. Definitely felt like a postseason game there. And expect the weekend to be none less than that. So Friday, K-State has a chance to take the series from TCU. And more importantly for K-State, finally getting over them. I didn't really realize that until doing a little bit of research that TCU swept K-State last year. And it was a 4-game losing streak coming into the night there. And K-State snapped that. So hopefully they can go on a little bit of streak on themselves and take care of business. And you don't have to worry about a rubber match on Saturday. So that's kind of the best outlook for K-State. But a good win without their manager tonight. This win exemplifies what this team has been all season long and anxious for tomorrow night.
I'm anxious for it as well, Eddie. And you know, again, you know, we've got meaningful baseball in Manhattan right now. And that's something we've not had in a while. And it's something to be really excited about. And it's a down, you know, they continue to fight, and they've been really competitive here in this Big 12 landscape. So eager to see what happens the rest of this weekend.
All right, Pro Project Podcast, K-State Nation, we have our special guest on the line here, former K-State basketball player from 2015 to 2017. He played with the likes of Barry Brown, Wesley Wundu, Kamau Stokes, and others. Austin Buckey, fresh from watching the Western Conference Finals Game 2. Austin, what's up? How you doing?
What's up, fellas?
How you
Thanks
doing,
for
Austin?
Having me. Good, good. Just got off of thrilling. Yeah, thrilling Game 2. Nuggets steal a game, go up 2-0. All that's exciting. All I know is it's way past my bedtime. So got my adrenaline running a little bit, which is never a good thing. It probably means I'm not going to sleep tonight. But hey, it's almost the weekend, so I guess we'll fight through till we get there.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Yeah, Yeah, it's past my bedtime as well. Also sitting here for this podcast, but yeah, it's not a good thing there, especially when I have Friday work in the morning. But yeah, it's almost close to the weekend, and K-State come off a big walk-off win in baseball there. Justin, by your reaction, you're a big Denver Nuggets fan?
So, I mean, I don't really have an affinity to a team. I grew up in Central Kansas. There's not really any NBA team. I guess probably Denver. Denver and Oklahoma City are probably the closest geographically. But, you know, there's not a team in Kansas City. So it was hard for me growing up to, like, be geographically tied to a team. I've kind of just bounced around, man, if I'm being honest. Like, I kind of cheer for who I cheer for. I follow the league really closely. I'm a huge NBA fan. I probably digest way too much NBA media. I always tell people it's like my wife watches like The Bachelor and like reality TV, and I listen to NBA podcasts. Like that's like my yeah, it's like the men version of reality TV because there's just so much drama. So I kind of just tune in for the drama. I pick matchups. Like, I'm definitely cheering for Denver in this series. I'm kind of just over the whole Lakers thing. I mean, I can't really do it with the Lakers fan base. They're a little too much for me. And, you know, Denver, I feel like the Nuggets franchise has just kind of been, like, meh forever. And now they have, I mean, to me, the most entertaining player in the league right now to watch, in Nikola Jokic. So I think, like, between him just really enjoying the way he plays the game, and then, like, man, it's, you know, Denver Nuggets, like, they never sell anything to anybody. Like, everyone seems kind of neutral on them, so, like, why not? Like, and then I should disclose that I have a fairly substantial wager on them to win the NBA Finals, so I am financially interested in them and them making it. So, but, you know, between all of that, you know, yeah, sure, let's go Nuggets.
Well, look, you have to, you know, if you got money on the line, you got to do what you got to do. You got to do what you got to do. And I'll say this, too. The NBA, boy, I've never heard the comparison of the NBA to the Bachelor for you know, men compared to women. But, boy, that is true with the drama. I never thought about it. That is a great comparison. The drama of the NBA on and off the court is 100%. As much as you would see on The Bachelor every, what, is it Monday, Tuesday, both days on ABC? I don't even know.
It's Monday because I know I can attest to Austin's talking about, because my wife also watches The Bachelor, The Bachelorette as well, and any of that stuff. And, yeah, I listen to podcasts myself. So, yeah. So I know what Austin's talking about.
Yeah, you got your podcast rotation.
Yep.
Yeah, it's, you know, between, even during the regular season where, you know, I know there's a lot of casual NBA fans that tune in this time of year and then don't really care about it other than that. And, you know, I try to watch as much NBA regular season as possible, but, I mean, I probably listen to, like, 5 hours of NBA podcasts every week, like, during the season, just because there's always something to talk about. Like, someone's always pissed off, someone wants to be traded. There's always, you know, some, like, owner dispute. Like, everything from the owners down to, you know, just everything about the whole league is, it's a lot more public, you know, than, like, the NFL. I try to keep everything behind doors. And to me, it's just, you know, at the end of the day, all of this is for entertainment. And there's, when it comes to sporting, I mean, I think the NBA, you know, a lot of people give it flack because it's drama and it's fake and they don't try that hard. And it's like, yeah, you know, whatever. It's fun. It's entertaining. Like, I don't care. You know, I'm just sitting on my couch drinking a glass of wine. Like, I just want to be entertained, and they do a pretty good job. So,
we'll get to K-State momentarily. Austin Buckey, former forward here at K-State, here on the Purple Project podcast tonight, joins us here on this week's edition of the Purple Project podcast. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden for the pod. We'll stay on the NBA course for a few minutes, and then we'll talk K-State. So we already covered the west side. So left on the east side, you have Miami Heat, the 8 seed, who lost their first playing game to the Atlanta Hawks. They're playing the Boston Celtics. They took game one of their series last night as well. Austin, who you got in that series?
I think you had to have been a little delusional before the series to seriously pick Miami. I'll be honest, like, I definitely looked at the betting odds, and, you know, Miami to win the series, like, they're pretty heavy underdogs, and I definitely stared at that line and thought, like, man, there might be value in, like, picking them just because they're playing so well. But as someone who has watched a decent amount of the Miami Heat this entire season, they suck. Like, James, the talent disparity between these two teams is insane. Like, the Miami Heat just objectively are not a very talented basketball team. And there's two things happening right now. Number one, Jimmy Butler is decided that he was just going to be Michael Jordan for a playoff run, which has been really fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Just not missing shots. I mean, if you look at any metric for the Miami Heat scoring, shooting percentage, 3-point percentage, effective field goal percentage, any of these advanced analytics, you compare regular season to postseason, it's like they completely overhauled their team and got new players. It's night and day different. So I don't know how to explain that other than they're just hot. Like, they're all confident, and every time they shoot the ball now, they feel like it's going in. You got, like, guys like Gabe Vincent, he's a nice rotation player, but, like, that dude's probably going to make a lot of money in free agency this offseason just because he has played so well. Max Strus, came out of nowhere last year. Duncan Robinson, who sat his ass on the bench, like, all year in the regular season, he's coming in, making plays. And Tyler Hero, arguably, probably their second most talented player on the team, isn't even playing. And then I didn't even mention Kevin Love. I mean, Kevin Love was just, basically playing behind Dean Wade in Cleveland and, like, couldn't get any minutes.
Yeah.
Cleveland waived him. They didn't even trade him. They didn't sign a trade. They legitimately just said, hey, dude, see ya, thanks, and bye. And now he's playing meaningful minutes in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't understand this Miami thing. It makes no sense to me. Like, Boston should absolutely route them, and it wouldn't shock me if Boston, routed off the next four and won 1 and 5, and we all looked back and said, oh, that Miami Heat thing was interesting for a little bit, but I don't know, man. I don't know how they won last night. Their games were entertaining. Jimmy Butler's entertaining. So I'm still leaning the Celtics, but I don't know, man. Like, this Heat team they're weird.
They are weird, and it's a weird. I mean, think about that. If somehow the Heat would get through the Bucks and the Celtics in the same year on the same heater, I don't know. That seems like a lot. And you're right, Austin. This Miami Heat team was not good this year. Like, they were not good at all. And I thought they were going to go to the play-in. I really did not think that they were going to escape the play-in, and then they did. And all of a sudden, again, you're right. Jimmy Butler turns into MJ over there, and he's putting up 35, 35 a night. He had the one game where he had what, 50 some, 60 some? I forget what it was in the first round, but he completely went off.
He had 51.
51, yeah. And yeah. They were he's just been on fire. I mean, he's been just on a complete heater. And this Boston team, they went to the finals, but for some reason, they sometimes feel like the kid at the table that, like, plays with their food a little bit and doesn't, like, fully just eat. Like, they just, I don't know. Sometimes I get that vibe from Boston the last couple of years. I know they were in the finals last year. I know they're in the Eastern Conference Finals this year, but sometimes I just get that vibe from them. So I feel similar, Austin, that the Heat could hang around, but Boston's just too good. I don't know. Knocking out the Bucks and the Celtics both, I don't know. I just feel like you're playing – that's just a little too good to be true for Miami.
Yeah, I think with Boston, it's their biggest thing is, I think their differential in 3-point percentage on games that they win versus games that they lose is, like, the biggest differential in the league. It's like, I'm going to butcher this stat, but it's something like, when they win, they shoot, 41% from three, and when they lose, they shoot 30% from three. I mean, it's an absurd difference. So really, it's like, if Boston is making their threes, they win by 25 points, and it's like, oh my god, who the hell is going to beat this team? They're so good. But if they're missing threes and they're shooting 30%, then they squander games like they did yesterday. There's really no in between. Like Boston's one of those teams that they're not going to win a close game. They're not going to go out there and win a 5-point game. They're either going to like just blow the brakes off the other team by making shots in their face, or they're just going to look like the weird stumbly Boston team where Jaylen Brown has 3 turnovers in a row because he dribbles the ball off his foot. Like it's they're a bizarre team. They're way more talented, but I don't know. Like, we got lucky. The final four teams, I think, they're interesting. I definitely, at the start of the playoffs, I would not have, I would be lying if I told you these four teams would be in the final four. But I think from just like an entertainment standpoint and just like matchup, like watching the game every night, and the NBA is so smart. I know the players hate that the NBA went to this every other day schedule, but just from a viewing standpoint, just the fact that I know, like, at 7:30 p.m. Central Time, I can sit my ass on the couch and watch an NBA basketball game every single night for the next week and a half, like, sign me up. I don't give a shit if the players are mad about it, you know? I'm gonna enjoy it.
And it's had storylines galore the whole playoffs. I mean, it has been one of the more entertaining playoff runs that I can remember.
Yeah,
and nobody knows who's gonna win.
It's actually parity for once.
Yeah, nobody really knows what's happening. I mean, even Vegas. Like, you look at the Vegas odds. Even Vegas is like, shit, we don't know. Like, the Lakers. I mean, I bet the Lakers were done for in you know December, and you know, I mean, I know they lost tonight and they're down 2-0, but they haven't lost at home yet. Like, they could easily win the next two, and next thing you know, we're 2-2. Like, I don't know. I have no idea. That's why it's so interesting.
Yeah, and one of those basketball podcasts that I was listening to mentioned that these four teams played in the so-called COVID bubble not a couple years ago. So, I thought the Lakers were done. I thought they weren't going to make the playoffs. They were terrible. And then they traded away Westbrook, and they somehow got into the play-in. Yeah, the Heat, they've been awful until this playoff run. As well, but yeah, coming into that series, actually, ESPN, I was watching that the other day. They had Heat having a 4% chance to win the series, so obviously the Celtics. Yeah, obviously.
That's disrespectful. 4%, I mean, come on. Like, they're professional athletes. They get paid money to play basketball. Like, 4% is, like, come on.
Yeah.
A little bit higher than that.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry was on the TNT postgame last night, and he talked to the guys, Ernie and the guys, about it, and he's like, oh, we know about it, but we're just going to go out here and use that, continue to take care of business. So it'll be interesting to see how the Celtics are going to bounce back game two. That's recording this on Thursday night. That is tomorrow night, and I actually like the every other day schedule. It keeps it well balanced and entertaining from my perspective anyway. So all right so transitioning from that to K-State. All right, Austin, from that all right, so tell our folks that don't aren't familiar with you or whatever, tell our listeners, how did you get to K-State?
Well, do you want the full, you know, Austin Buckey biography, or do you want the 15-second cliff note?
Let's just start with a 15-second cliff note.
So, you know, I'm from Beloit, Kansas, which is, you know, a small town in north central Kansas, like 3,000 people, and you know, I was pretty good at sports growing up, but, you know, coming with a small town, you don't really get a lot of exposure. I kind of realized, you know, I was like, hey, man, I'm pretty good at this basketball thing, but I'm not really getting a lot of looks because nobody can even find Beloit, Kansas on a map. So I was like, I'm going to need to figure something out here. So I went to junior college for 2 years, went to Hutch Junior College down in Hutchinson, Kansas, and I started both years there. We had some awesome teams, and we, you know, were really competitive. I think my freshman year, we were, you know, preseason ranked number one in the country. My, you know, sophomore year, I think we were top 5 in the country, something like that. You know, did really well in Hutch, and, you know, had several college offers, you know, at very various levels. And really, for me, it came down to I kind of knew I wasn't going to go to the NBA. Like, I hit that realization probably my sophomore year of JUCO. Like, hey, you know, I'm not blessed with, you know, 7 foot wingspan. You know, I don't have a great handle. I was like, hey, you know, let's kind of focus on this academic thing, because I was a pretty smart kid. So I knew I wanted to do chemical engineering, which automatically kind of whittled down the list of schools. Like, you know, a lot of the schools that were recruiting me didn't have chemical engineering. And it honestly got to the point where I told my coach at Hutch, like, hey, if a school calls you, first question out of their mouth is ask them if they have chemical engineering. If the answer is no, just tell them I'm not interested. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of schools that met the criteria. I did have one that I had pretty much in my head committed to. You know, they had been recruiting me for a long time. It was a really good fit. Went on my official visit there, basically just a formality at that point. I, you know, kind of already told them, like, hey, I'm probably going to come here. I went on my visit there, and, you know, long story short, they told me they weren't interested anymore, and they pulled my scholarship offer, and I was, you know, this was late April. I was graduating from Hutch in a week. I didn't have a school to go to. I was like, well, shit, it's not great. So I was like, hey, you know, Coach Eck, who was my coach at Hutch, I was like, hey, you think you can get on the phone with some of the staff at K-State and see if they're looking for a walk-on? So just through some of those connections, I was able to, you know, get a tryout, and kind of things went from there. It was just like, I'd love to, like, tell you guys this fantasy story of how I was a huge K-State fan growing up. It was my dream to go to K-State my whole life. I be honest with you guys, I didn't really care about K-State. Like, all my friends were K-State fans. I just didn't really care. I was like, I don't know. Like, my parents weren't like huge K-State fans or anything. So it really just came down to the point where I was like, shit, I don't have a school to go to. I need somewhere where I can get a chemical engineering degree and hopefully I can play basketball. And it kind of just happened to work out last second. I mean, and thank God it did. Everything obviously turned out, and here I am talking to you guys. And, you know, now I'm standing in my office right now, and I look around, and I have K-State stuff everywhere. Like, if you walk in here, you'd think there's, like, a shrine of, you know, Kansas State University. So, you know, it all worked out, but it was definitely not the probably not the intended route when I set off for university. So
when you got to K-State, obviously you are new school, right? New environment, and you're focusing on academics, you're focusing on chemical engineering, and you're also playing basketball. So two-pronged question. Number one, what was the adjustment like off of the court and on the court when you got to K-State?
Off the court was huge. I had, you know, I had 4.0 at Hutch, and I'll be honest, it wasn't even close. Hutch was basically, I'd say Hutch in a lot of regards was easier than high school, academic-wise. I remember the first test I took at K-State, I was like, wait, it's timed? Like, I have to finish this in an allotted time period? Like, that's, not, and I'm like, bombed it. I did not do well, because at Hutch, everything was like, oh yeah, just take your time. If you want to take 6 hours to finish this test, go ahead. And so I got to K-State and I was like, wow, I'm really going to have to like figure out how to go to big boy school. Cause this is not, we're not in junior college anymore. So, academic part was, you know, it took a little get used to after a while. You know, I figured it out and it all worked out fine. I'd say on the court really wasn't as big. The biggest thing about the on the court was just the day-to-day grind, like the work ethic, the film, the treatment, taking care of your body, weightlifting. I mean, at Hutch, it was our daily basketball routine was like roll the ball out and basically pick, you know, play pickup for a couple hours a day. You know, we had practice, but it was, you know, we only had two coaches on the team. Like, it's hard to coach a college team with only two coaches. So like, it was basically just a little bit more structured version of pickup. that's all we did. Like, we didn't lift weights, we didn't condition, we didn't do any of that. I get to K-State, and it's just like, oh my God, like, we're booked solid from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with weightlifting, film, conditioning, treatment, cold tub, hot tub, medium tub, like, just like, what is all this stuff? So, I think from a talent standpoint, that, like, I played with some insanely talented players at Hutch, so it wasn't one of those things where I got to K-State and it's like, oh my God, these guys are so much better than me. I've never played against guys these good. Like, that was not the case at all. I played against some insanely talented people in JUCO. So the talent wasn't a shock at all to me. It was just like, it was what was required of you on a day-to-day basis that was shocking at first. I mean, shit, I think I put on like 15 pounds in my first like 4 days at K-State, something like that. Just from lifting weights. Like, I mean, lifting weights and like drinking protein shakes every day because it was mandatory. We'd lift weights for however long, and then everyone would mandatorily have to drink a protein shake. And I didn't lift weights at all in JUCO. And next thing you know, it's like, holy shit, I just gained like 15 pounds and my body feels weird. So it was definitely an adjustment in that regard.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Joined by former K-State walk-on basketball player Austin Bucky here on the Purple Project Podcast Weekly, episode 158 of the edition of the podcast. Kind of hop on that horse here. I transferred from a JUCO as well, and I was pretty good in math, right? So I actually wanted to see the engineering field. And after the first week of engineering classes and whatnot, I said, nope, this ain't gonna work. This ain't gonna work. I gotta go somewhere else. I gotta get in somewhere else. So eventually I got into journalism, and that was that. But kind of going on Alex's question, Austin, for you is, which was the most difficult part of the daily grind? Because from JUCO to D1, I've listened to other college podcasts and said the transition is the daily schedule, the constant. You have to be to weightlifting on time. You have to be the class on time. You got to go to lunch. You have to eat, 40 minutes a day, or not 40 minutes a day, 40 minutes. Yeah, 40 minutes to eat lunch. Then you got to go back and do more film study and whatnot. What was the most difficult part of the schedule, you would say?
Sitting in meetings, wondering why the hell am I here? that was, I mean, it's, like I said, it's just the daily, I'm not trying to, sit here and tell you guys, I'm a superhero and, that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying, it is... Being a Division I student athlete, especially at a high major school like Kansas State, there's just so much random shit that is required of you from a day to day basis. Where it's we had an app called It's been so long. It's called Teams or something. Where basically our director of basketball operations, it was where we kept our schedule. So if we would upload everything that we had to do throughout the day. It would be in there. We'd go in the app, and it was tailored to every single person. So, I had my own teams where if I had a personal workout, I would have it scheduled in there. And I just remember, my least favorite part of every night was opening up that app and seeing what I had on the schedule tomorrow. And it's like, man, what is all of this shit? Like, what do I have to do? there's just so much, the basketball part is fine. I get it. I need to watch film. I need to lift weights. I need to condition. I need to do workouts. That's good. But there's so many meetings, compliance meetings, where you're meeting with the athletic department about different things. I'm trying to think of some examples. It's just all this meticulous stuff that just adds up. And, it got to the point where I just got used to it, honestly. But there was times where I'm like, man, I have a lot of homework I gotta get done. I gotta get some of this stuff done. I gotta study. Especially my senior year, a lot of my classes were labs and group classes where it's like, man, it's 9 p.m. I'm sitting in a compliance meeting my project group is waiting on me at the engineering building because they can't start the project until I'm there. I'm just like texting them on the side, like, hey guys, I'll be there in a little bit. Like, I'm in a meeting right now telling me not to gamble on fantasy football. Like, just shit like that. Like, oh man, like I said, after a few years of it, I just got used to it. But then, like, when I graduated and I got out of school and I got a full job, it was weird. It was weird having time. I was like, oh my God, it's 5 p.m. I just got off work and I actually have time. Like, it was the first time in a long time that I had free time. I had to, like, learn. I had to find a hobby. I had to, like, do things because I was just so used to at K-State, just my schedule being filled from basically the time that I woke up to the time I went to bed. I was either in a meeting, watching film, lifting weights, practicing, studying, doing homework in a class. I mean, there's probably an hour, if I was lucky, there was an hour a day where I, you know, had time to myself to just relax. And, I was looking back on it now, it's like, I don't know how the hell I did that. Cause now I was, you know, I just sat on a couch and didn't move for 3 hours watching an NBA game. And so I'm like, how did I do that? Like, that was a lot. So that's the biggest adjustment. I think that a lot of, you know, people don't understand, like, obviously, you know, I think most people understand we work hard and we do all of that, but it's just all the extra stuff that behind the scenes that just gets exhausting, you know.
100%. And on the court, right, you were there for a couple of years and there for some ups and some downs. You definitely kind of hit the peaks and valleys both when you were there. Is there any particular memory, any particular incident or instance on the court that sticks out to you most as a memory, maybe good or bad?
Oh man, I mean, I got plenty. I got some funny ones. I mean, obviously, my go-to answer is both my junior and senior year, probably the two better games that I played happened to be at Allen Fieldhouse, and I hit a three. That is probably one of the best feelings I've ever had in the world was checking into, and it happened 2 years in a row, which makes it awesome, is checking into a game on the road at Allen Fieldhouse as the 6'6 white guy with wristbands, and just, you can sense the entire crowd. You can just by the mood of when I checked into the game, you can just sense all, you know, 12,000 people just collectively going, who the fuck is this guy? And then just within 10 seconds of checking in both years, like hitting a three and just the mood shift of the crowd, it goes from like, oh my God, we let this guy score on us? Like, are you kidding me? That was fun. Those are two great memories. And then, you know, I played well both games too, so that helps. I don't know. I got a lot of funny stories, obviously. A good one that comes to mind is my senior year. We were playing in the Big 12 SEC Challenge at Tennessee. And Tennessee, that was when Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield and that whole crew were true freshmen. So they were pretty average just because all their best players were super young. We definitely should have won. I think we were favored by like 4 or 5 points. We should have won. But that was one of those games where I hadn't played in a couple of games. My senior year was weird where I like, was either checking in and playing quite a bit, or I was just getting DNPs. You know, my junior year, I was playing pretty consistently, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a game. But my senior year was just kind of all the map. I'll be honest, like, I didn't do a great job of staying engaged. That, you know, I'd check out during some games just because it's like, man, I don't think I'm going to play tonight. Like, you know, I'm just going to look around the crowd and see if I can see any funny signs. that was one where I hadn't played in a couple games. Like, yeah, I'm probably not playing tonight. And I just remember, for whatever reason, I don't really have a reason, maybe I did at the time, I decided, like, I'm just not really going to warm up today. Like, I'm just going to kind of, like, talk to the coaching staff, like, chat with the assistant coaches, you know, dick around with the managers. I'm not really going to, like, go through the whole warm-up thing. And So I just didn't really warm up. And I'm sitting on the bench with my shoes untied. I didn't even tie my shoes. I don't know why I didn't do that.
That is the low level. I didn't even tie my shoes for this game.
I'm not really sure why I didn't tie my shoes. Looking back on it, like, I probably should have fixed that. But anyway, next thing you know, I don't know if we got foul trouble or something happened, but out of nowhere, I just, you know, whoever yells down the bench for me to check in, and I'm like, shit. And I run down to the scores table, my shoes untied, and all the coaches are like, Jesus Christ, bud, you like fucking tired shoes? Like, so I'm at the scores table, they're waiting on me, they're tying my shoes, I got my shoes tied. And then we have the button up pants, you know, the pants on the side that are all buttoned.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to rip mine off, and I can't get them off. There's like two or three buttons that are still stuck. So, you know, the coaches are on my ass about tying my shoes. And I'm trying to rip my pants off. Can't get the pants to rip off. So the refs are sitting there. They're holding up play because, you know, they can't start until I check in. And everyone in this arena is just looking like, Jesus Christ, who is this guy? And I just remember checking in, like running out there being like, oh, my God, I'm not ready. It's like I was not warmed up for this. And sure enough, first possession that I'm in there, we're running some, you know, handoff action. And shot clock's down to like 4 seconds, and Wesley at one dude dribbles straight at me. I'm in the right corner, and he hands the ball off to me for some reason. And I have the ball in my hand with like 3 seconds left. I think Admiral Schofield was guarding me, who was like SEC Defensive Player of the Year. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess we're gonna see how warmed up I am. And I take like one dribble baseline, pull up like 18 footer, basically behind the goal. I was basically on the baseline. And I made it. I made the shot of a wonderful pull-up at the shot clock. And I just remember thinking, like, in my head, like, I don't know how the hell that went in. Like, that was so lucky. But I was like, all right, like, cool, let's do this. So we go down and play defense. And on the way back, we ran a kind of, like, a secondary break offense called weak, which basically the start of the offense was – I would trail, I would catch the ball at the top of the key, and I would swing it. Well, as I'm running down the court, I can see Rick Barnes, who's the Tennessee coach, I can see him just screaming at his assistant coaches because they didn't have me in the scouting report. And so he's yelling at them, like, what does he do? What does he do? And then you can see like the assistant coaches like ripping through their scouting report, like trying to see if like I'm in there anywhere. And I cross half court as the trailer, and our point guard swings the ball to me, and I catch the ball on the swing just past half court. Like, I'm shitting out. I'm probably 5 feet behind the three-point line, and their entire coaching staff just screams, shooter! Shooter! As I'm at, like, half court about to swing it, and when I tell you that was a good feeling. Like, having their coaching staff thinking that I was just Kyle Korver that came off the bench, like, ready to jack it up. And that was a good one. So.
Oh, man. Hard to follow up that. Speaking of coaching, yeah, you played all your years with Coach Bruce Weber at the time. You came to K-State. How is he as a coach?
I think you'll get the same answer from any player who's ever coached. Like, he's the definition of a player's coach. Like every single person that's ever played for him has loved them. He's, you know, he gave me a scholarship. He gave me a chance to play at the Division I level. He did so much for me. I definitely can never repay him for all the things he's done for me. I think just as like a human being, it doesn't get much better than that. There's so many things behind the scenes that, you know, people don't understand about what he did for our program and our team and the kids on our team. Like, just helping us get through life and making sure that, like, he was just so passionate. I always thought this was weird at the time, but now I'm a little bit older, I kind of get it. He was so passionate about making sure that we got the most out of our experience. When we went to Italy the summer between my junior and senior year, and he paid Because, you know, the athletic department, they give us a budget, basically saying, like, here, you, the men's basketball team, you can take your team to a foreign country and, you know, whatever. Here's the amount. We're going to give you guys $20,000. Whatever the amount was, Weber doubled it because he wanted, like, he doubled it out of his own pocket because he wanted to make sure that we were able to go to the Coliseum and go see all these, like, we got to go to the Vatican. And the whole thing was just like, guys, this is a once-in-a-lifetime trip. I want you guys to enjoy it. I want you guys to really, like, at the time, like, we're all, like, dumbass 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. We're like, all right, coach, like, we don't care. We just want to, you know, we just want to drink wine and go to some Italian clubs. But, you know, it was just things like that that, you know, as I'm more mature now, I look back and I'm like, man, God, that dude was just such a good guy. Like, literally is a saint. So obviously, like, there's that part of him. And then, I mean, I know a lot of K-State fans would probably argue with me here, but he's a hell of a basketball coach. Like, he's just so, he's so smart about the game and scouting and getting game plans and understanding, like, what to do. And he was a pleasure to play for. Like, he is, you know, I would die for that man. He's like my second father, and I know he's doing well. I know it probably didn't end the way at K-State that, you know, he wanted to or anybody else wanted to, but I know he's doing some awesome things with the Big Ten Network. I love tuning in to Big Ten games where he's calling it or doing the analysis because he's just so damn smart, and he has so much history about the game and knows so much. So, you know, I hope he's enjoying what he's doing now, but, you know, that's my guy. So, obviously, I love playing for the man.
Yeah, you know, and often, you know, we've heard again, you know, the gripes about from some, you know, not all, but some about Bruce and some things. But he won two Big 12 titles, and that's something that you know, very small list of coaches who have been at K State who have actually won a couple Big 12 titles, and obviously an Elite Eight run, and coached some tremendous players. So you know, I know that Eddie and I. I've talked about, you know, the importance of his accomplishments here on the podcast. And so I'm glad that you're able to come and tell some of those stories. But pivoting to kind of the change, right, from Bruce over to Coach Tang. Last year, what were your thoughts, you know, seeing the transition from Coach Weber to Coach Tang to all the transfers to the Keontae and Marquise 1-2 duo? Year one in the books. What were your takes after year one of the Tang era?
I mean, I think it's probably similar to every other K-State fan. I'm just, you know, obviously my expectations weren't great. I had a very good source, very, very good source that went and watched the team practice in fall before the season started, and he said they looked like absolute dog shit. So my expectations were low, just based on that feedback. But, you know, like that, I guess that's what you're going to get when you have a team with 13 new guys. Like, they're probably not going to look super great in August. So that's not shocking. I think it's just so different. And it's just so different than what I'm used to in a good way. I mean, the first 15 games of the season, it was just stressful. I couldn't even watch the games because the way that we play is just so foreign to, like, what I was used to. Like, it was just like, man, like, when I see a bunch of guys out there in purple jerseys playing basketball, I envision this type of basketball that, you know, that I played and that I've got accustomed to watching over the last 5 or 6 years. And then, you know, this last year was just so different. Like, it was just the exact opposite. But, you know, it worked. I think we had the right personnel for it, which helped for the play style. So I'm interested this year to see, like, how we adapt. Because I'm not sure if we're going to have the, you know, when you have a guy like Marquise DeWall on your team, you can get away with playing kind of this high-risk, high-reward type of basketball just because he can make so many things happen. And then Keontae is just kind of always the get-out-of-jail-free card. And it's like, oh, shit, 6 seconds on my shot clock. We're not looking like we're going to get a good shot. Let's just throw it to this guy who's, you know, one of the most talented offensive basketball players in the entire country, and he'll get us a shot, you know. So I'm eager to see what this year looks like, see if we can adapt and kind of change our play style based on the personnel. But, I mean, geez, guys, like, I mean, you can't really – there's not really much to complain about after year one. I mean, that was probably one of the more fun basketball seasons I've ever tuned into. And obviously, you know, it's easy to sit here and say, we, you know, could have made the Final Four, like, damn near, you know, could have won the national championship. That's how close we were. But we gotta temper our expectations here before we get too far.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Purple Project Podcast, episode 156, joined by Austin Bucky, former K-State walk-on here, joining us here tonight on this episode. Yeah, going back to the K-State this past year for basketball, yeah, me and Alex went on the podcast, talked about that, and didn't really have any high expectations for them. Going in and then getting these last-minute players, Keontae Johnson was, I know, one of the last players to be joined on the roster. And then you had Desi before him, and then I think one other player then as well. So, yeah, that was a fun, that was a hell of a ride that the men's basketball team put us through, especially in the tournament. All the games, as usual, are pretty stressful, but they're fun at the same time, and one of the more fun seasons that I've been a part or been a fan slash been a part of K-State basketball in quite a while. So, yeah, I think obviously next year, me and Alex kind of talked about this a little bit before hitting record button. So the uncertainty still of this roster going to next year, yeah. And how you're going to follow Act One up, as they like to say. You know, all this good things unexpectedly happen, right? And now, okay, how are you going to follow Act 2 up, you know? And we still have some unquestionable spots to fill. Obviously, a couple weeks ago, we got Taylor Perry in the transfer portal from North Texas there. Keontae, obviously, Desi's going to the NBA. Marquise is working out to try to get himself on the team. Keontae is getting some looks as well, so yeah, you're going to be needing to still replace that type of trio that really carries this team. Now, obviously, nowadays, when you're playing, you didn't have the NIL and the transfer portal when you're playing. So now, in the day age of college basketball, college athletics as a whole, we've had Keith and Valentine on his podcast as well. He talked about NIL. NIL and transfer portal, and now you get these guys that transfer almost every year because they're not playing or not starting, right? So what? I know I'm going kind of outside of K-State, but this is kind of a general college question. What are your thoughts on this day and age of college athletics with the transfer portal and especially with this NIL? Because I wish I had an NIL back when I came to K-State. I'll be living pretty good right now, but just explain about that.
Yeah, guys, I would have killed it in NIL if they had that when I was there. I would have played so much into it. I would have done any brand deal. It didn't matter. I would have done it. I would have been so good at that because I was just, you know, I had that personality to just act like, sure, I'll tweet whatever the hell you want me to tweet. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's way different. I'm actually on the board of directors for the K-State NIL, official K-State NIL Foundation, so I'm fairly close to kind of our NIL collective. Okay. That's, you know, all run by former student athletes. So like getting into that world and just like understanding what, you know, how can we be competitive and what other schools are doing, like it's I think it's good, and it was funny. I had an Uber. I travel a lot. I fly a lot, so I'm always in Ubers to the airport here in Kansas City. And God, man, there's some great airports here in KC Metro. And I had one the other day that just was giving me so many hot takes about the NIL and how he didn't think these athletes deserved the money and all this stuff. And I was letting them have it because, you know, just ridiculous. Like it's I mean, the first time it ever hit me, I remember we were playing a game one time, and I was at half court. I was stretching. I was next to Wesley Wundu, and he just looked at me, and he's like, yo, Mikey. I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, think of how much money I would have if I got a cut of this. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, look in the student section. And I just, like, looked. and there's, I don't know, dozens, hundreds of students wearing K-State number 25 jerseys, like, the one who's jersey. Just didn't have his name on the back, and he just like looked at me. And he's like, "Hey, Candyman, like, I should get some money." And I was like, "Fuck, man, you're right. Like, you should." So I mean, I think is the NIL the right thing to do? I undoubtedly, unquestionably say that yes. Like, we should be paying these people a fair market value. Like, we're in America, baby. That's capitalism. So I'm cool with that. I think. It's a wild, wild rush right now. Like, that's just, that's my kind of gripe, is like the NCAA is like kind of, they're just this like absent nanny that's like, yeah, like, I don't know, like, you want to like go play with the forks and knives in the drawer? Like, sure, like, I don't care, just don't get hurt. That's kind of like how they're treating like NIL right now. It's just like, I don't know, like, you guys wanted this, here's this thing, good luck. And so, you know, you have schools just like not following the rules that are, you know, taking advantage of it. And I just think it's the hardest part is like there's people and companies out there that are just taking advantage of 16, 17, 18 year old kids who don't know what they're doing, who are signing contracts, don't know what they're getting themselves into. And that is dangerous. And that's why I wish there was some regulation and a little bit more just a little bit more order in that world. So, you know, hopefully we get that figured out. I'm skeptical that it will. So, you know, yeah, I guess from a recruiting standpoint, like, it definitely is a thing. I mean, just the most recent example, Hunter Dickinson basically said, like, the reason I'm going to Kansas is because they're giving me a ton of NIL money. Like, yeah, that makes sense. Yep. You know, like, that's how
I appreciate the honesty.
That's how a lot of us find a job. It's like, yeah. Why did you go work at this job? And it's like, because they offered me the most money? Like, I don't know. Like, what do you want me to say? So, mm-hmm. I think it's time that it's refreshing that we've stopped the joke about like, yeah, these guys are going places because they want money. That's, we're human. Yeah. We like money.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The whole recruiting thing will be interesting. I think K-State's going to have to step their game up. I know our NIL collective that we have is pretty advanced to where we definitely got ahead of the game as far as like the NIL collective piece of it. The next part is as bad as the South. We just need people to donate more money. Like, I mean, we gotta have the people that can afford it and that are, you know, want to see K-State sports and athletics, you know, be competitive. Like, you gotta cop up the dough. So we'll see how that goes. And then, yeah, I mean, the transfer portal is what it is. It's just, you know, like, I go kind of go full circle back to our NBA conversation. I mean, it's basically just like, I mean, it's the NBA version of it where, you know, every player demands out and says, you need to trade me. I don't want to be here anymore. And, you know, not something I would do. It's not my personality. But the other thing that I think a lot of people don't understand about the transfer portal, or maybe don't think about, is, I don't know the number, I want to say like 50%, but maybe not that high, but a lot of the kids in the transfer portal are there because their team or their coach told them to go there. I think most people think that when a kid transfers, it's like, oh, he's just mad he's not playing and he wants to get out of here, he's too soft and he can't get through adversity. Man, I know from firsthand experience, there's a lot of kids that went in the transfer portal because the head coach said, hey, you're not going to play here, you need to leave. You know, that happens a lot. So, you know, it's, I think kind of back to the NIL thing, I think it's a little chaotic. I think there probably needs to be a little bit more regulation behind it. But I mean, from an entertainment standpoint, it's cool for this. It's good for the schools that don't historically get great recruits out of high school, because you can turn your program from a 5-win basketball team to a 25-win basketball team in one season if you just knock it out of the park on the transfer portal. Whereas in the past, it's like, man, if you're not getting any good high school recruits, like, you're gonna be shitty for a long time. You know, you have no chance. And so that's frustrating for those programs. So I can see, like, if I'm one of those programs, And shoot, like honestly, K-State kind of fell into that boat last year where it's like, man, we weren't very good 2 years ago. And now we, you know, last year we almost made the Final Four just because of the transfer portal. So I think that provides a lot of optimism for fan bases. It provides a lot of entertainment. It increases parity. So from an entertainment value, it's, you know, I think the transfer portal is good in that regard. I just think, you know, it's just never a good thing when you got 16, 17, 18-year-old kids who don't really understand the consequences of their actions, who are making decisions, you know, on shady contracts. And hey, if you transfer here, we'll get you this deal about cryptocurrency and stuff like that. Like, that stuff just like irks me, you know. It's just, you know, kind of predatory. So we'll see.
You know, and it's such a different landscape, and it's interesting that NIL and the transfer portal kind of collided at the same time. It is really interesting, you know, because it was kind of coincidence. It wasn't a coincidence. It seemed kind of like a coincidence that they came around the same time, but now you're seeing them so intertwined that it is creating, as you mentioned, just a completely different economy out there in that world, and you're seeing the NIL money used for the portal and to get guys in. And a lot of people talk about, as you mentioned, Austin, people jumping in the portal because they just want to leave. But there's no doubt about it that coaches use it to their advantage, too, to say, well, you know, I kind of want to clean house. There's some guys I would like to get here and, you know, fill in here. So, you know, we'll just, you know, tell this guy that he needs to leave and hit the portal. And some of those guys don't even find homes. You know, a lot of people go into the portal and they stay in the portal. So it's a different day. There's no doubt about that. But a quick question with NIL. I've heard Curry Sexton break it down. He actually had a fantastic podcast there on KC Sports Network breaking down one of K-State's collectives there. And Derek Young was talking recently, too, about how, you know, there's really three different buckets of NIL money. You know, one is to go up with high school recruits. You know, there's another that you can potentially use to retain your players, and there's another that you can use to go get transfers. And, you know, schools can't have all three. You know, you got to be strategic about maybe what you want to do. But especially K-State, because K-State is not currently up to par with schools like Texas Tech, who are just have NIL money coming from all over the place from all of their donations. So, you know, just how important is it for K-State to be able to stay competitive so they don't get near the bottom of the Big 12 and all of a sudden they're getting, you know, lapped by schools. And I'm not saying K-State is at the point where they're going to get lapped, but, you know, where they may fall too far behind someone like a Texas Tech or someone like a TCU who has, you know, donors in deep pockets, or someone like KU.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's really, and I'm going to defer to Curry and the whole NIL. I'm just on the board. I'm not, like, part of the day-to-day operations, so whatever they say definitely trumps kind of what my thoughts are. But really, like, the way I break it down is, like, there's a couple of different ways you can kind of go about the NIL thing. Obviously, there's, like, brokered deals between company X and student-athlete, like, Y, and that's pretty common. I think that was when NIL first came out, that was, I think, the first thing that everyone thought of. It's like, hey, Adrian Martinez, we're going to give you a Ford F-150 if you if you go on Instagram every week and shout out Briggs Auto. You know, like that type of thing. Like those broker deals, and as long as you're following the regulations, honestly, I'm not sure if there's a lot of regulations between those deals. As long as you're doing those are fair game. I think that's kind of like, you know, I know the Nigel Pack thing to Miami, you know, caught a bunch of flack. Like that, you know, was kind of found that boat where the, you know, the founder of this crypto company was basically like, you know, we'll give you, you know, almost $1 million if you, I don't know I think really the only regulation behind those types of deals, and obviously I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I think it's basically as long as the athlete is doing something. So I can't just, if I won the lottery tomorrow, I can't just go to, you know, case, you know, I can't go to Will Howard and say, hey man, I'm going to give you, you know, Bud Key Incorporated is going to give you, you know, $500,000 just, you know, that's going to be the deal. Like, there has to be some sort of reciprocation where he is actively showing that he is promoting, like, it's a partnership. I think that's where a lot of the, like, the stuff getting swept under the rug is going, where it's like these rich donors are going to these players and saying, like, yeah, here, here's $1 million if you come to my school. And then that players, they're not entering any sort of, like, binding agreement. It's just like, but the, you know, these donors are basically saying, like, hey, you know, what do you want to say? Like, no, we're NIL, we're following the law. And it's like, no, you're kind of not. You're kind of just being like the bag man, you know, which is not what the intention of the NIL thing was. And so that's where, obviously, that's where K-State's going to struggle, is because we don't have those, you know, we obviously have some wealthy donors that donate a lot of money to school, but we don't have people that are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies that can do all these things. So we're going to be limited in that space, naturally. And then the other part is, like, the NIL collectives, and that's, like, what Curry and that whole team is a part of, where they can, you know, they may not like the word that I use, but it's basically just, like, a fundraising where, like, they can collect money on behalf of K-State fans, donors. Like, we could donate to the NIL collective if we wanted to. And then they take that pool of funds and distribute it, you know, based on a certain set of rules. And really the only rule, but the main rule with that one is that they can't specify where the money goes. So let's say I wanted to give $500 to Will Howard. I can't go to the K-State NIL Collective and say, hey, K-State NIL Collective, I'm going to give you $500. I want it to go to Will Howard. That is against the rules. Like, I can donate money to the fund, and then they disperse the funds based on how they see it fit. And that's, like, what that whole team is working on. And we have some really good people like Curry. Like, Curry is awesome and just a genius with this type of stuff, that is kind of managing where those funds go and trying to optimize them for the, you know, the betterment of our athletic program. So those are the two ways. And that's where I see, like, K-State, where we can really take advantage of maybe our lack of funding, is if we can build up that NIL collective where, you know, let's say, you know, we may not be able to broker $1 million deals with star quarterbacks, but we may be able to build a $5 million collective where we can say, hey, every single football player at Kansas State University gets $25,000. You know, that goes a long way. You know, we're not going to get the 5 stars with that, but, like, we're going to get, you know, if we can go out there and say, hey, the K-State NIL Collective is donating $25,000 to every single football player, that's a powerful recruiting message, you know? So I think that's where I see our advantage coming if we're going to take advantage of it. And, like I said, I know we're kind of already ahead in the game in that, in the collective regard. But, yeah, I mean, as far as, like, the headline, you know, when you guys see NIL in the news, you know, where these mega millionaires and billionaires are donating monies and cars and yachts and stuff to athletes. I mean, probably we're just probably not gonna be able to compete with that stuff just because of the nature of our alumni base. But, you know, we'll see. That is until I hit the lottery.
Yeah, you hit the lottery, and then you just put it all towards the collective.
Yeah. So
there you go. Austin Buckey here on the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 158. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California. We have Austin Buckey on the pod here. One more question for me, and then, of course, Alex, I'm probably sure he'll have one more question, and we'll get into some rapid fire questions to end it. All right, so switching back to K-State, I'll be remiss not to ask the question, but obviously the fan base, when it comes to men's basketball anyways, came back to fruition when this team under Jerome Tang, which he just completed his first year here at K-State, started winning basketball games, right? So you as a player, what was it like to play in front of the home crowd at Ramledge?
It was really fun when we were winning. It was really fun on a big time weekend game in the conference. And yeah, I think you know, obviously we all know Bramlage when it's packed and when people are there and are excited. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. That was not every game. Reasons. Like, I, you know, I understand, like, it's just how sports works. Like, fans are more engaged when they're good. Like, look at the Kansas City Royals right now. Like, they're not good, and nobody goes to the games. It's just an endless cycle. Yeah. So, I mean, that's how kind of, like, KC basketball was for a while. It's like, when we were good, people went to the stands, and when we weren't, people weren't there. And so, yeah, I think, obviously, we had some really big home games. Like, my junior year, we beat Oklahoma when they were number one in the country. Trying to think. I think Baylor, my senior year, was number two in the country when they came in. And then, you know, well, obviously KU is KU. So, I mean, yeah, we had some big-time games. It was just, you know, the Tuesday night games in November when we're playing Coppin State at an 8 p.m. tip. Maybe not the most electric crowds in the world, but if I wasn't playing, I probably wouldn't be there either. So,
I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the honesty saying, hey, you know, Coppin State on November 18th at 8 p.m. just might not be there. But Austin, obviously, too early, appreciate you coming on the pod. But, you know, for me, I feel like I could ask another question, but I feel like it would be more valuable to our listeners to get another story. Because the stories are priceless. Do you have one other funny story that you can take us out?
Yes, yes, yes. Before rapid fire questions, yes.
Yes, before Eddie's rapid fire.
I'm trying to think of, I mean, I have story after story after story, obviously. I'm just trying to think of one that I could kind of get through. All my stories are, I'm a storyteller.
You're a very good storyteller.
I ran on. I'm trying to make it brief because I can, some of these stories I can talk for 30 minutes.
Well, we can get you back. We can get you back for the rest of them.
I'll leave you guys with a tease. I'll leave you guys with a tease on one. My favorite story at K-State. This is a story I've never told publicly.
Okay.
All my friends and everyone within the program know it. It was, I'll leave a tease. It was in Italy, and we were having a very fancy dinner. And Coach Weber got very angry at me, involving wine. And so that's all I'll say. I'll leave it there. It's a good story. And to this day, Coach Weber and I have vastly different views. The number of times that I have told my side of the story, and then he just shouts back at me like, "No, you're full of shit. That's not how it went." So, I'll leave it for another day because it's a long story and I don't want to go into it, but it's a good one. So that's
the ultimate tease.
That is the cliffhanger. That is the ultimate cliffhanger for sure. We'll definitely have you back on to share more stories here on the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. Wow, that is quite the tease. All right, so moving from that to a little bit of what I say rapid fire questions here, which I started with Jasmine Halliburton when she was on the podcast here. We'll wrap the podcast with a few questions here. All right, Austin, I'm going to start off with this. What was your favorite spot on campus?
My favorite spot on campus? The engineering building, because that's literally the only place I went. I'll be honest with you guys. I probably went to the Union twice my entire time at K-State. I probably went to the library. I was the engineering building and the engineering building only. So that was my final answer.
You're an honest man. You're an honest man. We appreciate that.
Yes, you are. All right. So favorite spot to eat in the Little Apple?
Oh, man. now that I'm, 28, almost 29-year-old adult, I like Lucha. Just, you know, I know that's like the cliche answer. That's, you know, that's what everyone says.
It's the right answer. Is what it is.
But I'll be honest, I never went when I was in college. I every time I tried to go, it was like an hour long wait. You know, I'm like, I'm not dealing with that. So I didn't go to Lucha for the first time until I was graduated. So
you know, now it's definitely my wild.
Yeah, it's my vibe now because it's just low key, relaxed. I'll drink some beers, have some tacos. That's kind of like what I'm into now. But when I was at K-State, my favorite place to eat by far away was the Panda Express on the east side of town. Not the one in the Union, on the east side of town, the far drive. I spent so much money at that damn Panda Express. And I don't know what it was. I never really was into Chinese food. Like, it was always, you know, I was like, Chinese food is like, okay. But like, there was one day or one experience where I had Panda, and I was like, damn, this is really good. And I just, I ate so much Panda Express. So that was not a local restaurant. So sorry to all my local Manhattan restaurants, but I spent a lot of money there.
Nice, nice. All right, so off staying on that type of eating. All right, so Kansas City barbecue or the latter?
What'd you say, sorry?
Would you rather have Kansas City barbecue or another city to have barbecue, like Texas, Memphis?
Kansas City, by a mile. And this is something I am very adamant about. And I'm not even a Kansas City guy. Like, I didn't grow up in Kansas City. I'm very agnostic on the city. When people tell me, like, I have friends that have lived here their whole lives, and like, Kansas City is the greatest place in the world. And it's like, have you been to LA? Have you been to Chicago? I don't really fall victim of like the Kansas City. Like, it's a great city. Don't get me wrong, I love living here, but I'm not one of those guys. Like, I'm a realist. I understand. Like, it is what it is. However, when it comes to barbecue, that is something that I will die on, because I've had it all, man. I've lived in Houston. I've lived in St. Louis. I've had Carolina barbecue. I've had Memphis barbecue. I'm just telling you, like, it's the consistency, man. It's the consistency. Yeah. It's the fact that I could put 100 barbecue restaurants in KC Metro in a hat and pull one out, and I can go eat there, and I know it's going to be really good food. That's just, you don't get that everywhere. You don't get that everywhere. All the barbecue here in this city is really good. So give me KC barbecue all day.
Yes.
That's the right answer. Right, you know what? I think, honestly, Eddie, that's the best set of answers we've had yet. We got a Lucha reference.
Yep.
We got a Kansas City barbecue reference.
Uh-huh.
But I will say this, Austin. You were right. It's just funny. I grew up in Kansas City as well. I live in San Diego now. So I'll have people, look, I love Kansas City. I love Kansas City to death. There's a reason I'm living in San Diego. I mean, I'm not going to lie. You know, I mean, it's a gorgeous city. Kansas City is not on the ocean. Kansas City does not have all the things San Diego has to offer. So, love Kansas City to death, but I am with you there. But barbecue, I will die in my grave. I'll die. Die in my grave. Thing with Kansas City barbecue scene is it's grown. You mentioned it. It used to, when I was younger, it used to be a smaller scene. You know, you'd say, you know, here's like six solid restaurants that you go to, but now there are so many good barbecue joints all over Kansas City, and some of them don't get all the hype because there's just so many, but there are good restaurants all over. So, best set of rapid fire that I have heard yet.
Yeah, I know we had our girl Jasmine on here, and she of course mentioned Texas barbecue as well.
Look, I've lived in Texas, Eddie. I've eaten Texas barbecue. It's not as good.
I like barbecue. It's my favorite food. I've loved barbecue my whole life. I've had it all. And I mean, if you go to one of the best barbecue restaurants in Texas, or one of the, like, I live next to, when I lived in St. Louis, I lived next to one of the best barbecue places in St. Louis. It was really good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's not consistent. Like, yeah, like, Texas has their good ones. St. Louis had their five or six really good barbecue places. But Kansas City, man, it's just like, everyone here knows how to work a grill. Like, that should just be like part of, you know, like, you know, you pay your Kansas City tax, and then you have to, like, you have to prove to the city that you can own and operate a pellet grill. Like, that needs to be a requirement, you know?
If you can't smoke a brisket for 12 hours, then you can't move to Kansas City.
Couldn't agree more.
All right, three more. All right, so this is new that I've put in here. All right, so what is your pet peeve?
Well, my go-to answer usually on that one is red lights. I can't stand sitting at red lights, but I'll give you a new one because that one's not super exciting. My new pet peeve that I just discovered that it was a pet peeve like 2 days ago is when billionaires tell me how I should live my life. Like when Elon Musk tells me that working from home is morally wrong. I'm not here to take advice on what I should believe. Like, my morals should not be dictated on a billionaire who has never had adversity in their life. So, Bill Gates telling people they need to cut their carbon emissions when he's flying private jets around the world. It's just like, man, you know, if you're a billionaire, don't tell me how to live my life. Like, just do your thing. Go have all your money, do your thing, but just don't tell me what I need to do. Like, that drives me crazy. So that's my new one.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like that one. I like that one. Yeah. All right. So what TV show are you binge watching right now, if any?
I don't watch any TV. I watch the NBA and I watch golf. That's basically it. My wife and I watched we binged both seasons of The White Lotus on HBO Max. We watched those a couple months ago. That was probably the first TV show I have watched in, I don't know, years. That was probably the first one I watched. I have friends tell me that we would like The White Lotus, so we watched it. It was great. It was two seasons. It was quick. It was easy. And so we had HBO Max, and we're like, you know, let's start another show. And we started Succession. I think we got like four episodes into Succession, and we just stopped watching it. It's just like, you know, it was good. Like, it was fine. I just don't have a lot of time, and, you know, like, I'm busy, got shit going on, and just, don't have a lot of time to watch an hour-long episode every night. I know people are like, come on, dude, you can find an hour. And you're right, I probably could, but I don't really have the desire to. So we watched The White Lotus, and that was fine. That's probably the last one.
All right, okay. All right, so your I know you mentioned Wesley Wundu quite a bit on this podcast tonight. All right, so who is your favorite K-State teammate that you played with?
Obviously the cliche answer is I loved everyone, there's a pretty obvious pecking order because the best man at my wedding was one of my teammates, and it was Zach Winter. He played at Hutch with me. We played 2 years together at Hutch, and then he walked on at K-State, so he was my teammate at K-State, and, you know, we've been best friends ever since. Like I said, he was the best man at my wedding, so, you know, I don't want to put all my teammates on a MySpace top 8 friend list, you know?
Right.
If you had to, it's pretty clear cut. Like, Zach Winter was my best man. I feel like he's got to be number one. So, he's my guy. I just played golf with him this past weekend and beat his ass, so. There you go.
There we go. Nice, nice one. And finally, who wins a national title first? Will it be football? We're talking about K-State. So who wins the national title first? Football or men's basketball? And obviously, Chris Klieman signed that 8-year deal this past week as well. So I've already brought that up in the daily. So got that going right now. So who you think it is?
I mean, if you're just playing statistics, you know, I'm going full engineering nerd. If you just look at the numbers, I think it's unarguably would be men's basketball, just because the sense that, I mean, men's basketball, you just have to make the tournament, and then you get lucky, what, 6 games in a row? Like, that's how you win a national championship. College football, you have to basically go undefeated in the regular season in a really tough conference, and then when you get into this 4-team playoff, you have to play Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. I mean, let's just be honest here, guys. Like, I'll take my chances of getting lucky and winning 6 games in a 64-team tournament than I would us going 12-0 and then getting through Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State. Give me men's basketball.
Can I just say this too, Eddie, with the men's basketball, and even with football doing a future expansion of the playoff.
Yep.
It's so hard to beat the likes of Alabama, of a Georgia, a team like that, because the talent disparity is so wide. Where in college basketball, you mentioned Austin, you only have to win six games. You got to get in the tournament, get hot, win six games to cut down the net, and there's so much parity in college athletics. We've seen it from the in college basketball, from the mid-majors to the majors. I think a big part of it is what we were talking about earlier, the transfer portal. And you've got a lot of talent at some of these schools, and there's just more parity, too. So you only have to win six games. There's more parity. And all it takes is one hot streak, and you see it every single year. So, man, I tell you what, K-State football has been knocking it out of the park, but I just don't know how they can ever compete for a national title in football. I mean, hopefully I'm wrong. I just don't. It's so hard in college football to do that. But in college basketball, we saw K-State, 13 new players this last year, and they went to the Elite Eight. I mean, you know, that, and they very well could have won the national title. They very well could have. You easily could have made an argument this last year, you know, if they get by FAU, which was a close game that they could have absolutely been playing UConn in the championship. So, Austin, I'm with you 100%. You know, football, it's hard to see. But basketball, the playing field is just so much more even, and it's just so much easier, but path just so much wider.
All right, that's going to do it on a rapid fire here on the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 158. Our special guest this week, Austin Buckey, former walk-on here at K-State, played basketball here 2015 through the 2017 seasons. Austin, what you got going on the rest of the weekend? Obviously, we're approaching summer, so you got any big plans coming up here this summer?
My number one plan right now is I'm going to take my ass to bed, and I'm going to sleep, and I'm going to get a great night's sleep, and, I got a lot of travel a lot for work, so I got, you know, I'm going to be all over the place. My wife and I are going to Iceland in August, so that'll be cool. For the most part, just hanging around. It's about to be a slow time of the year once the NBA season's over. It gets a little quiet just because I can't watch baseball because the Royals are awful. So, I basically have a break until football season starts. So, we're gonna spend some time hanging out with the family and doing some travel and trying to stay sane, I guess.
All right, yeah, that sounds like a content plan for me as well. So definitely we'll work something out to get you back on the podcast when you get back, or when basketball season here rolls around, we'll get you back on for sure. This has been a good time. Appreciate you.
We have to get him on to get to the end of the story. I mean,
yeah, we got to finish that story.
You got that story.
So we got to have you back on for sure. But Austin Buckey, appreciate you for joining us here tonight on this episode 158 of the Pearl Project Podcast, weekly edition, K-State Nation. If it's your first time listening, you love what you're hearing, definitely make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever your favorite podcast provider is. We're going to be providing content throughout the summer, bringing on special guests, former K-State personnel, or our friends on the show for sure. We started that last summer and figured, well, let's just continue that trend until football rolls around. So we're going to do it again this summer, and we're already off to a solid start. Jasmine Halliburton was on here 2 weeks ago, and now we finished up with Austin Buckey. So, yeah, I'm going to be doing the same thing here, going to bed right now when I wrap this podcast right now. So, Austin, thank you so much for hopping on.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah, have a good night. I am going to go close my eyes now. See y'all.
Peace. All right, Alex. Last thoughts here before... Well, There you go. So I'm going to get him back on here real quick. We're going to get Alex's thoughts here on the podcast here. Episode 158 of the Purple Project podcast here. There we go. So, Alex, quickly, last thoughts here before we close it out.
Hey, I don't know why my AirPods literally, they hung up right when he hung up. I don't know what the hell happened there. my last thoughts are that K-State baseball, I'm going to round back to that. Tremendous win tonight. If you can get out to Toyton, get out there, support those Cats, two more games. Like I said it last week, you know, we'll say it again this week. Basketball, keep an eye out. You know, I don't know what's going on. You know, we still got 3 scholarships available, but I do expect there to be movement at some point. So, again, we'll have the latest for you all there on that front. Obviously, thanks to Austin for coming on the pod. He was tremendous. And, Eddie, we've got a story that we can tease for a while.
Yep.
Apparently, it's never been told in public. So, we got an exclusive there coming, so I guess that'll be ultimate tease for people to sit to him. But another good week, and look forward to it again next week.
All right, we'll put the pin on that. This has been another edition of the Pearl Project Podcast. All things K-State, episode 158 is in the books. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex Aiden out there in San Diego. We will talk to you again next week. Have a good weekend. Enjoy some K-State baseball. Alex, we'll do it again next week.
Look forward to it. Have a good week, everybody.
Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you all on the next episode of the Triple P Podcast. Go Cats!